You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay.
Welcome back and thank you for choosing the Locked On Celtics podcast for your daily operation. Monday through Friday, we're the Raining Jays, just carrying you through this season, talking Celtics 5 days a week. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III, also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam. We're talking about this Memphis game. You want to throw a little interjection in there?
I was going to say AO, but then I realized that Taco Trey Kirby does that on starters. And so then it's not original whatsoever. And so you heard me say a little bit, but then not much.
Like you had the instinct to say it and then realize that you're biting somebody else's style.
I wanted to acknowledge my own presence, but then I realized it was unoriginal. So now we're here.
Yeah, I mean, you got to come up with like a thing.
I'll get a thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to find Jam a thing to say when I introduce Samuel Jamison Packard III, also known as...
Jam's here! Oh, that's terrible. Welcome to Jam Town! No, everything's a little too high energy for the intro, but you know what?
Wubba lubba dub dub!
That's another biting someone else.
Damn! That's all I got. All right, so Celtics played the Memphis Grizzlies in was a game that both alternately sucked and was awesome at the same time, depending on at what time you were tuning in. So we'll talk about the stuff that was great. We'll turn around and figure out some of the problems the Celtics are having and how they might be fixed. And then later on, we'll get to some really spicy junk and some tacos. I mean, a real milestone moment for the Locked On Celtics podcast and the Raining Jays. It really, when you think about how the internet works, this moment that we'll get to later on is really just, I mean, I feel like we've made it. We've hit it big. But let's start with the Grizzlies game where the Celtics at some point there, right about halftime when they had just given up a 20-point deficit in the second quarter, people started tweeting at me like just despondent, and Celtics went in the third quarter, turned it around a little bit. Fourth quarter was awesome. Kyrie Irving was just spectacular in this game, 26 points, 13 assists. But Sam, I think really where this thing turned was the Celtics' ability to contain Marc Gasol. Now, Marc Gasol's overall numbers look pretty good. He had 15 points, 10 assists, 3 rebounds. But what they did do is force him into 6 turnovers. And in the second half, his second half numbers look much worse than his first half numbers. Let's split it up before we get to the reaction. 11 points, 5 of 6 field goals, 1 of 2 from 3, and 7 assists in the first half. 4 points, 1 of 5 shooting, 0 of 1 from 3. 3 assists in the second half. And his 2 of those assists came early in the third, only 1 in the last 17 minutes of the game. So the Celtics, I think, figuring out how to contain Marc Gasol was the key to turning this game around and winning it going away.
And the real turning point was Yabu's wagon. I mean, he basically turned around to the entire team and said, hop on the wagon. He was great. I mean, just compared to Daniel Theis, who I've been one of the biggest Theis advocates there is, but he could do absolutely nothing with Marc Gasol. And it felt like he was really struggled in the first half. The Celtics, anytime they doubled, it felt like it was kind of a weak double. And Marc Gasol was basically able to just accept the double team and then find the open guy. But in the second half, the Grizzlies basically stopped being able to score points. Anything, they couldn't do anything easy. It helped that they missed a number of shots that I thought they would make. But just Yabu, it was just as simple as not letting Gasol get amazing positioning in the post and Yabu being a big body and forcing him outside. And I just thought the Celtics did a much better job of containing him, whether that was it started with Yabu just not letting him get easy positioning. But then they really tried to focus on bringing the double hard on him when he got the catch. Marcus Smart had a number of steals, but the entire Celtics defense really clamped down in the second half. And it started with Gasol, but it really just creating turnovers left and right, whether it was Gordon Hayward reaching in for strips or Tatum getting steals. The defense really turned it up in the second half. And that was the huge reason for the comeback. I know the Kyrie was great on the offensive end and the scoring kind of increased, especially after that dreadful second quarter, but a lot of that started on the defensive end and scoring early points in transition and not allowing the Grizzlies to set their defense. But it really was like the fact that Yabu was able to play that many minutes and effective minutes was damn impressive. Because Al Horford right now on a minutes restriction and playing without Aaron Baines has been a huge problem for the Celtics, just been able to controlling the paint. I mean, the Grizzlies dominated the paint for the entire first half, and people were out there, Bill Simmons included, just demanding a trade and just not realizing that Aaron Baines is a person who's going to come back and is a pretty big piece for the team. But the Celtics limited that in the second half and created a lot of turnovers. And while Marcus Gasol was 6 turnovers total, but Yabu being able to play that many minutes and being able to limit Horford. Horford was come back in the game until I think it was like 4:40 left in the second half. And we saw the impact Horford have, and I'm sure we'll talk about him later on the offensive end. But they're going to, with Baines out, they're going to really have to try to find time with big men just to stretch it out to kind of survive the minutes Horford's on the bench. And Yabu had a huge stretch. It's not that like, he played amazing or had many of these highlight plays. He was solid and didn't let Gasol just dominate as he was in the first half.
Yeah, the first half was when Gasol got in there against Tice, it was over. Like Tice could not do anything, and he didn't play in the second half, Tice. So that's the Celtics have this little stretch of bad luck here where Baines broke his hand and Horford is on that minutes restriction, like you said, but they're also facing big guys, big, powerful players. And we saw Joel Embiid just kill Daniel Tice. We saw Marc Gasol just kill Daniel Tice. Big, bruising, back-to-the-basket type of guys who are very good at getting positioning. And Tice, for all of the things that he can do well for the Celtics off the bench, that is just not one of his strengths. Strength is not a strength for Daniel Tice. He is more athletic. He can stretch the floor, but he is also going to be the guy that just runs and can hang with some more athletic centers and power forwards. So Yabu did step in, and the 12, almost 13 minutes where he was a plus 12 on the floor is huge. Not just because, like you said, the numbers, it's the fact that he was just out there making a positive impact. And I really do believe that him being able to stay on the floor that long allowed Al Horford to come in fresh and do the things that he did. And obviously Kyrie Irving had a hand in that, assisting in a bunch of Al Horford's buckets. But those threes, he was hitting them earlier in the game too, but just being fresh and being able to play hard and make the moves that he did, I think getting that extra couple minutes on the bench was huge. And Yabu's going to be the guy. Maybe some days it'll be Shemmy. Ogilvy didn't do very much in this game. He barely played in the second half. But some days he'll be great, and some days Yabu will suck. But the Celtics have to find ways. They tried going small for a stretch with Marcus Morris in there, and they tried to play zone, and that didn't work at all either because Gasol just picked them apart. The first half was just Gasol just picking them apart over and over and over again. I mean, they ran it through him, like, and he turned into the best passing big man since Arvydas Sabonis in the first half. So a huge turnaround, and you're right, Yabu was a big reason for that. Kyrie Irving.
It wasn't just like he was dominating, but he was just he made like the Celtics defense was much better in the second half, just like not letting easy buckets into the paint. Like even though Marcus Gasol was dominating the first half, it felt like any driver, including like Mike Conley or Dylan Brooks, could just get into the paint with ease. And I don't know exactly how Yabu did it, but I'm going to give Yabu full credit for stopping Marcus Gasol, but then also stopping all drives to the paint. But the steals the Celtics had in the second half, I just thought they locked in. The Celtics were probably the best defensively I've seen them. Definitely, this is huge recency bias, but I can't remember them being like more locked in the second half. The Grizzlies couldn't score. The Grizzlies were terrible in the second half.
No, they only scored 39 points on just about 31% shooting. They missed a lot of shots. And some of it was just them missing shots.
I was going to say they got pretty – the Celtics did get pretty lucky because I – in watching the game, the Grizzlies missed a fair number of shots that you expect them to make. Like they had some open shots roll out, some layups roll out. Especially like when the momentum was really shifting towards the end, there was some luck involved in the Celtics comeback. But
sure.
With that being said, the Celtics definitely made it difficult for the Grizzlies.
But at the same time, the Grizzlies shot 65% in the first half, so there had to be some leveling off. You look at the overall box score and you say, well, how can the defense be any good? They gave up 47.5% shooting to the Grizzlies. And the first half was so amazing. They hit everything. And partially because, like I said, Gasol was picking them off. He was setting guys up for easy baskets. In the second half, without Gasol setting them up, they shot just about 31%. It's just a different story. But some of it also was just misses. Some of it was good defense and challenges. That could just be water finding its level. The Celtics did a great job defending, like you said, with Gasol. They doubled him a bit. I thought Jason Tatum did a great job anticipating passes, entry passes into the post. From the Memphis side, you can say those were probably a little slow, a little sloppy. But at the same time, the Celtics made an adjustment. They knew when Gasol was down there, especially when he had a matchup issue, like, he had Tatum on his back, and Tatum was almost like baiting him. When they switched him onto Gasol, then they said, oh, here we go. Gasol's got a smaller guy on him, and they lofted this little pass, and Tatum just swung around twice with steals that anticipated the pass and started breaks. In the second half, the Celtics had 19 points off of 10 Grizzlies turnovers. So really, when you look at it, that's the difference in the game. 19 points off of turnovers. The Grizzlies only had 4 points off of turnovers in the second half. They had 15 points off of turnovers in the first half. So they kind of alternated sides. The Celtics stopped turning it over. They stopped giving up transition opportunities, which obviously can increase a field goal percentage. They outscored the Celtics in those points off of turnovers. They outscored Memphis in points off turnovers by 15. And they ended up winning the game by what? 9. So that right there is, you can just point to that as your difference in the game. Another big difference in this game, Kyrie Irving, who had an overall really good game, but the second half was phenomenal. And I'm going to focus on him checking in with 7.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, when it was 90-83 Memphis. Now, he checked in between free throws, so Mook hit a free throw. We shouldn't give Kyrie credit for that. So it was 90-84 before Kyrie could do anything. Kyrie, in the last 7.5 minutes of the game, scored 10 points on his own, assisted on an Al Horford three and a couple of Al Horford baskets, plus an and one, and a bucket from Mook. So 9 points there. If you want to give him the and one, that's 10. So he had a hand in 19-20 points in that last 7.5 minutes, which was, by the way, a 28-13 run to close the game. Kyrie came in and made he took the comeback that was happening and he just threw it into fifth gear and carried the Celtics to that win.
No, he was absolutely phenomenal down the stretch, and he was the MVP of the Celtics. And the points were great. Like his ability to get to the rim, especially in transition, when you're talking all about the defense and the Celtics points off turnovers, he has this great ability to get to the rim and especially to just make those easy layups. But down the stretch, and it's something that he mentioned post game, it's just all the attention that the Grizzlies were paying him. They basically were throwing so many different bodies at him, and he basically made the right basketball play. I know it's something that Scal mentioned on the broadcast, but he was finding open guys. He found Horford for the kind of those huge threes, but he also found Horford in space, allowing him to kind of get to that basket for the and one you mentioned. He was just doing everything correct. Like the Grizzlies were really focusing on packing the paint and not letting Kyrie Irving to the middle of the floor. And then when he did, throwing a number of bodies at him. And we saw him, he drew up the play during halftime, but he did a great job just facilitating and ended up with 13 assists. And I think this is his like fourth 20-10 game in the last couple of games here. He's really been probably the best we've ever seen Kyrie Irving, but he did absolutely everything down the stretch and was basically the key to the Celtics' victory. I know Mook made some big shots. I know Horford definitely makes some big shots, but it was basically Irving doing everything to kind of on the offensive end. When he could score, he took it. But when bodies were flying towards him, he found the open guy. And he's the main reason why, I mean, the defense is a huge thing, but the defense basically facilitated Kyrie's offense, and he's been phenomenal this entire season. It's the best Kyrie Irving I think we've ever seen.
I would agree, mostly because of how engaged he is in other aspects of the game that he hasn't historically been, especially obviously defensively. He's out there giving an insane effort on defense, which I'm sure there are people in Cleveland thinking, well, where was this when you were here? Which is a fair enough point, but it's here now, and I think some of it's maturity, and some of it is just understanding that the effort needs to be there if he is going to be the guy, to lead them to a potential championship run. So I think the hustle, really, when you think about, to me, the signature play was Kyrie getting the offensive rebound off his own miss.
And drawing the foul, yeah.
Yeah, which that right there, just more than any play that he made, he had some amazing finishes, but that right there was like, man, this guy is just, he wants it. And sometimes that old cliche, well, somebody wanted it more. That was the embodiment of the, well, he just wanted that. To let Kyrie take a mid-range jumper and then go and get his own rebound when you're Memphis is inexcusable. But from a Kyrie perspective, I thought that was just a phenomenal play. Lots more to get to here. Marcus Smart, Gordon Hayward, we haven't talked about Mook much. We'll just continue this conversation about the Memphis game when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So my favorite play, I think, of the night was after the ref somehow blew a video review of a ball going off of Mike Conley between Marcus Smart's legs and out of bounds, not touching Marcus Smart, but somehow, like, they made the original call that it was off Smart, and for some reason, somehow, they didn't see enough evidence, which I thought was clear as day, that it went off of Conley. So all Marcus Smart did was go and steal the ensuing inbounds pass and whip it off of, I think he whipped it off of Gasol, and then Kyrie goes diving in, going after the ball. That right there was one of the signature plays, my favorite play, because that came late in the game. It was a critical play, and you see Marcus Smart doing Marcus Smart things. And again, Kyrie in the middle of it, giving his effort as well.
No, Marcus Smart is the key to, he's the straw who stirs the drink. I mean, he has four steals, but that doesn't count. Like the crazy charges he takes. He made a huge three during that comeback, also made a nice reverse layup, but he only finishes with 8 points, but he's the guy who like makes everything go. And you're right, that play was amazing. I thought he should have got a charge called on that play where Conley basically ran into him and threw the ball between his legs. But he's been just a steadying force. And it feels like almost cliche at this point for us to talk about like his impact in winning, but like what I don't know what more there is to say. He played 28 minutes, but he felt like like that's the guy you want down the stretch. That's the guy who you trust. And I don't remember, other than the kind of that big layup that I mentioned earlier, reverse layup he made in transition, I don't remember of any offensive plays that he had. But on the defensive end, in terms of a guy you want guarding Mike Conley, or a guy you even want switching onto Gasol in the post and just body, there's a number of plays where he wasn't even doing much. It was just bumping Marc Gasol while they were like setting picks in the middle. And just like, it's the small things like that, just being physical. That guy, Marcus Smart, embraces contact, and it's kind of the toughness the Celtics needed. It's just, I'm more gushing about Marcus Smart. Like I've run out of like good ways to analyze. This guy gives maximum effort at full times, and he finds his nose for the basketball. And that steal you mentioned is perfect, Marcus Smart, because they should have had the basketball, but they found a way to get it. And it was just like a lazy inbound pass. But of course, he's going to get the advantage on that and kind of make the right play. But he was fantastic down the stretch. And I thought he continues to be fantastic in starting role without putting up really any counting numbers.
No, not at all. But when the Celtics were down 12, he's the guy that had a huge impact in just whittling down that lead. And it felt like in the second half, as the Celtics were doing this, people were taking turns. Like Yabu would go in, had a block, had a big rebound, and then Hayward would do some things. And then Smart had a stretch. About 4.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, he had a steal. Then another 45 seconds later, he came up with a rebound, and then another steal. And then he hit the three. And then he hits a.
And then he shot. Then he hit a three, and then he of course launched another three almost the next possession and missed it. But that's the Marcus Smart experience.
Of course, of course, and that's what he does. But that stretch of a minute and a half, really, where he's in the middle of everything. By the time he subs out, that 12-point lead is down to 7. And now it's a single-digit lead going into the fourth quarter, and that feels more manageable for the Celtics. And then later on, he comes back in and does some more stuff. But he was one of the guys going off for stretches. Another guy going off for stretches was Marcus Morris, who continues to be one of the key contributors for the Celtics, who may be an all-star, who doesn't give a shit if he's an all-star. And today on MassLive.com, shout out to my new teammate Tom Westerholm, who put up a piece talking about Marcus Morris and his all-star candidacy, quote-unquote, where he says, quote, "I mean, it is what it is. Our team success depends on a lot of stuff, and that's my main focus, trying to win games for this team and helping this team as much as possible. If I'm an all-star, I'm an all-star. If not, it's still pretty cool to hear. I'm just happy to be able to stay consistent and be able to play at this high level I'm playing at to help this team." Marcus Morris, I mean, I'm all in on the all-star Marcus Morris, because he's a tick under 50-40-90. If you're new,
that's insane.
Yeah. If you're new to basketball parlance like that, 50-40-90 is the magic number. 50% shooting, 40% from three, 90% from the line. And he's at 89.6% from the line. I forget who tweeted it out. Somebody, I think, I forget who it was. But if he hits his next four free throws, that's 90%. And 50-40-90. Like that, historically, is saved for like,
that's MVP type numbers.
Yeah, that's Steve Nash hit that like once, like Kevin Durant hit it once, like Curry, like, and it happens like every so often. And some people make the argument that he's not shooting as much as those guys. So, but he's still shooting enough where he qualifies for all of those numbers. And it doesn't even matter. Like, I'm not trying to say that he is those guys. The fact that he's hitting those percentages, that Marcus Morris is hitting those percentages, is unreal. And here we go. We're on to the Marcus Morris gushing segment, which is one of the most insane regular features that I didn't see coming this season.
He's the Celtics' third leading scorer, only a less than a point behind Jason Tatum. And so he's still shooting a lot. He's still getting a number of points, but he's been Mr. Consistency for the Celtics. I looked at the box score for the Grizzlies game, and I was shocked to see that he was 4 of 9 from three-point land, which is still a great percentage, but I'm shocked to see that he missed 5 threes. He's been the guy you rely on in the clutch, and he hit 2 very difficult mid-range shots, one with basically Mike Conley in his jersey that I was amazed that he's able to knock down. Now, the funny thing is, like, if he misses those shots, they're like, people on Twitter are going to be about furious about the mid-range jumper, but he's the type of guy where in the mid-range, taking someone one-on-one, if the guy's bigger than him, he's faster than them and going to get to the rim. And if he has any bit of size advantage, like he did on Mike Conley, he's going to shoot over them and is such a good shot maker that he's going to normally knock it down. And the percentages bear that out. He was second in the game with the 22 points and was fantastic, 7 of 13 from the field. There's not, like, he's just been Mr. Consistency for the Celtics, and it's just any point the Celtics needed a big shot, he's basically been able to deliver. And his 3-point shot making ability has been kind of a huge thing for the Celtics, and I thought it was big in the second half. Basically with all the attention on Kyrie Irving, there was a lot of plays where it was Mook would set the initial screen, and he didn't even really set the screen, he would slip it a number of times and get the ball with his defender moving at the 3-point line. And I just have complete faith in him either to pull up and knock down a three. Like, anytime he attempts a three, I've like a lot of faith it's going in or going to the basket. He had a damn good Euro step from Mook, which was not normally something part of his.
Sweet.
It's not part of his repertoire. I don't think he made the basket, but he drew the foul. And then just a great up fake, I think, on Jaren Jackson. But he's been fantastic throughout the entire season, and he's and just like the faith they have in him being able to go small with him and put him at the center. I don't think it was like the most successful at the stretch, but he's been a top three Celtics this year. Like, it's been Kyrie, Mook, and then the rest of the people. Like, he, in terms of consistency, it's absurd. I'm a huge homer. I'm gonna put, like, hand up, yeah, but I absolutely think that he deserves all-star consideration just because the Celtics are one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, and he's probably been the second best player on the Celtics so far.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think, I mean, how much more are we going to gush about this guy? But he's averaging career highs, and you can say, well, 15 and a half points a game isn't an all-star. Okay, maybe. I've stood by my assessment that I think what he's going to end up being is like an injury replacement for somebody. I think having him recognized in that manner would be fine. He's playing extraordinarily well, and the percentages bear that out. And when you look at the pace adjusted averages per 100 possessions, it's 27 points per game, a career high. He's per 36 minutes, it's at 20 points per game. So when you flush it out and look at his efficiency, he's only playing 27 and a half minutes per game. And he's not getting star level numbers. He's not getting 35 minutes a game. Who knows what he would do with those extra 10 minutes. But in that time, you can only ask him to put up so many points. And that's why those pace adjusted numbers, the per 36 and the per 100 possessions, really mean a lot, because you get to see how he compares to other players, and the numbers that he's putting up are really, really good. So, and who knows, this isn't going to be like De'Aaron Fox getting snubbed for an all-star game, who is having an obvious all-star season, but he's up against like Mike Conley, and Mike Conley is so deserving that you got to give it to Mike Conley now, and you just got to say, well, look, De'Aaron Fox, he's young. He's going to have plenty of seasons where he's going to get an all-star. Like, this is Mook's only season at this point that he's going to have this kind of production. And there's no, well, we'll give it to him next year or something like that. Like, now's the window. Now's the time to get him his one all-star appearance. And I think, I definitely think that he has, it has merit. If he doesn't make the all-star game, I'm not going to like throw a fit.
I will.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Of course. Well, one of us has to. It's just not going to be me.
Well, no, well, I'm the only one who's not employed by a legitimate news agency, so I feel like fits of rage and irrational takes are now falling to me, and I'm willing to take that mantle for Marcus Morris, the All-Star. Right now, he's been better than Ben Simmons, who's the most empty stats motherfucker in the league.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. That's a harsh take. I just said it right now. He's averaging basically a triple-double, but as we mentioned in the 76ers game, a lot of that is just not having an impact and getting a lot of empty stats. But give me Mook, man. He's been the second best player on the Celtics after Kyrie Irving. I don't think that's in dispute whatsoever.
So, all right, we have to continue. We were really going long here. We haven't even talked about Al Horford going. What was his final overall number here from three?
5 of 7.
5 of 7 from three. Celtics offense looks a lot better when Al Horford is hitting threes, which he has struggled with this season. And now he's finally, I think, starting to come around to his shooting. But early on the season, it wasn't really what we had expected. He shot 43% last year. Now he's up to like 30, just about 36, which would represent a really good number overall, you know, when you look at the rest of his career, but a drop from last season. Now we're starting to see the threes start to fall a little bit again. And again, if he's going to be hitting the threes, then that changes the entire Celtics offense, because he in the second half kind of took over the Marc Gasol role, where he was hitting shots but also picking people apart with his passing. It's almost like that end of the basket, that end of the floor, was where the big guy's passing was on display. He really opened things up, but getting those shots, getting the shooting, and then he had an awesome like drive and one reflexed. That was fun. It's just we're half an hour into this podcast. We're only really just talking about the impact that Al Horford really had.
Him knocking down threes opens up so much for the Celtics offense. I mean,
everything.
Just the simple pick and roll action. If you see it with Marc Gasol, if Horford's not hitting threes, he can, like, the big can drop and put all their attention on Kyrie Irving. And if he is hitting threes, that big has to kind of stick to it, Horford, and that just gives Kyrie Irving that much more space. And so Memphis really sold out. It was basically like, we're going to take away Kyrie Irving. We're going to basically leave Al Horford wide open. And when he knocks it down, he was open, and it makes the Celtics offense that much more dynamic. I think Al Horford has been the kind of the key to the Celtics five out offense ever since he got here. I think he was a major reason why Isaiah Thomas had the kind of the career year that he had. But he's been huge for this basically the Celtics for his entire time being here. He is like the whole way they're able to play five out, the way they're able to spread the floor. Like, that's the reason the Celtics tried to go small. They didn't use him at the time, but they went small and tried to really spread the Grizzlies out and make Marc Gasol play on the perimeter, basically not make him play free safety back there on defense. If they can play five out effectively, they become so much more dynamic as an offense. This is because it basically gives Kyrie Irving, like, free reign to go to the basket if the defenders really have to cling to shooters. And so I think the Celtics, when they're at their most effective, you're going to be it's Al Horford at the five and then shooters around him. And so if his shooting stroke is going to come back, that's only positive for the Celtics, because that's going to exactly what their offense needs to kind of turn things around. We've seen it of late, like, over the past couple of weeks, their offense has definitely gotten better. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's kind of coincided with Al Horford kind of returning to shooting form. But him hitting threes just opens everything up for the Celtics offense and makes just their offense so much more dynamic.
I'm going to leave it there because we have been talking for a long time. We still have one more segment to go. We've got some junk to talk about, and we're going to hand out our tacos, our weekly, sort of weekly taco award for the best players of the past week. So stick around for that coming up next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So normally I go through the Rain and Jays hashtag, and there are questions, and then there are some questions here about the Rain and Jays, like what would the plan B be if Anthony Davis was to go elsewhere, just use the picks or package a deal for someone else? Is there anyone else on our radar? I don't know if the
plan. I can't talk about Anthony Davis at this point. I'll wait for 2019.
I mean, yeah, I'm so tired of the Anthony Davis talk. People love the Anthony Davis talk. What's the plan B? The plan B, I think, might be to make the picks or package the picks and
keep the all-star talent on the team that currently exists and try to keep winning.
Right. Basically try to develop these guys. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. There's no need to package these players for somebody else. One of the big mistakes that teams make that always gets them in trouble is if they whiff on their number one target, they make a move for a player that's third or fourth on their list.
This is already too much Anthony Davis talk. We're supposed to be talking about junk right now and Red Panda and other and porn bots.
We're getting there. I'm just saying. I'm answering a couple of these questions before.
I know, but this is how you get sucked into the dumb Anthony Davis talk. You just mentioned it a little bit, and now we're talking for 5 minutes about Anthony Davis.
All I'm saying is that the Celtics can't get caught up in making a move for somebody else and giving up assets they would have given up for him for somebody else just to do it. And they're not the type of team to do that. So one other Rain and Jays question. Is Kyrie in the hunt for MVP?
He it's should be.
Kona King Kahuna.
He's not, because the MVP award's all about narrative. And the narrative is not behind him right now because the Celtics have underperformed expectations. But he should be because he's having the best Kyrie Irving season that's he's ever had. He has a career high, I think, in rebounds, steals, assists, maybe field goal percentage, but don't hold me to that. And the Celtics are playing much better basketball, but because they've underperformed, they really have to do a lot of winning in the second half of the season. For Kyrie to kind of get that consideration because it is such a narrative based award.
However, I will say that the narrative could be set up for him if the Celtics do turn this around and do make a run in the second half. And if all of a sudden in the second half the Celtics are awesome and a lot of these problems are fixed and Kyrie is still playing the way he is, then they may have a case to say, look at Kyrie held this team together while they were struggling, and now that a few other guys have gotten their acts together, now Kyrie's stuff is really shining, and he could, and of course it's a what have you done for me lately, that strong finish could be a thing that gets him at least into the top five, which I think he can be. So those are questions that we found using the Rain and Jays hashtag. I also found really the most monumental tweet in Rain and Jay's hashtag history, because somehow some porn bot decided to use the Rain and Jay's hashtag in an effort to get their clicks. Now, please do not click that link because it's probably trying to steal your information and steal your money. Do not click that link. But porn bots use these hashtags because they're popular, and Rain and Jays have arrived. If we're being used to solicit porn people trying to steal your money, I mean, I can't think of any greater internet compliment. I think internet compliments are measured in porn bots.
Well, the internet, the greatest success of the internet is basically it's like pornography discovers something and then the rest of people catch up. Like the pornography is the great innovator of the internet. And so if the Reigning Jays are being included in such hashtags like Chrismica and Shake Your Booty or Brexit Idiot, Reigning Jays, I mean, I don't know. That's just great company to be in. And so if our hashtag is getting included into some poor bot tweets, that's fantastic. Now, I will say I'm not holding it like once Reigning Junk is a part of the porn bot hashtag, then we've really made it.
That's true. That's the next step in our development is to get the Reigning Junk to a point where people are trying to.
And that's up to you listener gods out there to just keep using the hashtag. One, we'll probably mention your dumb ideas online on a podcast. And I'm sorry for calling them dumb. That was just a brash thing I said. But most of my ideas are dumb. But
I don't think anybody's really claiming the Reigning Junk is smart. Like it's dumb. Intentionally dumb. It's supposed to be.
That is absolutely fair. But so the people, the listener gods out there need to keep using those hashtags because we'll keep saying them and then you'll join the elites of Eliza Canlip, who tweeted Pornbot with 8 followers, who tweeted out the Reigning Jays. Speaking of Reigning Junk, can I move on for more hot takes?
Do it.
Red Panda tonight dropped 3 bowls in a row. And let me tell you, I'm out on Red Panda. The lady has been doing the same bit for basically what, the past 15 years? No innovation, no change. She gets an Achilles injury and basically can't flip a bowl to save her life. Meanwhile, I don't know if who else caught the halftime at the Memphis game, but the amazing Sladek is out here putting 19 chairs on top of each other and climbing to the top of them. The amazing Sladek is 10 times better, 1,000 times better than Red Panda. Red Panda's old news. She hasn't done anything new. She can't even flip bowls anymore. And it's ridiculous. People just give her so much praise for her past. But this is the NBA is a now league. You got to continually improving. What has Red Panda added to her game in the offseason over the past 10 years? Nothing. It's been 5 bowls. It's been 5 bowls ever since Red Panda existed. Has she ever added a 6th bowl? No. Has she ever added like a new costume? Nothing. It's the same weird music that creeps everyone out. And now she's dropping bowls. And frankly, I'm the first one. I'll be the first one to come out and say I'm not a Red Panda fan. It's too much. It's just a legacy at this point, and she needs to retire. I'm done with Red Panda.
That is the hottest Red Panda take I've ever heard in my life. That you are just lit up over Red Panda.
What is she like? She doesn't. I've seen the 5 bullets trick. I saw the 5 bullets tricks in 2002. Change up your game, Red Panda. The amazing Sladex adding chairs left and right. What has Red Panda done for me?
She's just out there giving you steady, consistent performance.
She got her unicycle stolen. What kind of halftime performer has her equipment stolen?
Hey, now that's not her fault.
Keep better track of your things, Red Panda.
Wow, the Red Panda slander is just vicious. I will not stand for it. I'm not afraid to take an unpopular opinion. I'm not even a big Red Panda fan, but I will not stand here and have her legacy, her legendary performances slandered in such a way.
You know what's towards
the end of her career. So
you know what's sullying her legendary career? It's her dropping 3 bowls in a row. You know, it's not my fault that she's past her prime. I can't even flip a bowl these days.
You millennials have no respect, none, for the people who came before you. She's an innovator. There was no halftime show before Red Panda.
Yeah, but in 2007, the bowl game, it's not fun anymore. Start flipping something else. You know what? Other people have juggled like chainsaws. It's played out. The Red Panda's got to go or come with something new because it's ridiculous. It's at this point, it's just legacy stuff and I'm not here for it.
Well, we're gonna have to move on because otherwise this is
good.
Because
I got more junk. So I was watching the game. I've been doing some flying for the holidays, and so I didn't get to watch the game live. But I was following on Twitter because I was on a plane. And my God, Celtics fans need to calm down.
Oh my God.
There is a meltdown, like one of the first meltdown after the Rockets game, which I believe you already mentioned. But it's a regular season game and it's not even 2019 yet. But my Lord, like Terry Rozier missed two shots and people were ready to trade him and like just furious at Brad, saying everyone needs to panic. It was wild watching just how furious Celtics fans got. And I get that this team has expectations, but my Lord, people need to chill out. It's one game. I understand like expressing frustrations, but people were flipping out. It's kind of like crazy. So I went back and like watched the game having read all the tweets, and it made no sense to me. There was like one substitution where they brought, Marcus Smart back, and then no, they brought Kyrie back into the game, but they brought him in for Gordon Hayward instead of Terry Rozier. And there was probably like 30 tweets about how Terry Rozier needed to exit the game immediately and Marcus Smart needed to come back in the game immediately. And it's like, let's slow the brakes. Let's not question everything. People need to chill out. It was absurd.
I think the lack of early success has really put some fans into a hair trigger mode that now anytime anything goes wrong, they're just losing it. And there's no, as I put it out when after the Rockets game, there's no situational awareness anymore. It's a loss is just, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Yeah, they lost to the Rockets, but they lost to the Rockets with James Harden going off for 45 points and on 26 shots. He had a superstar performance. And yeah, certain things didn't go well. You're also missing a guy. You also have one of your main guys in a minutes restriction. And you're playing a team that is on fire at the moment. And they're supposed to be one of the best teams in the West. And they're finally starting to play like it. And you lost to them by, 14? Okay. So that sucks. I didn't want to lose. But people were like, this is it. I can't believe it. I can't believe they lost. What do you mean you can't believe they lost? It's the Rockets. It's James Harden. That's going to happen. On the road, it's going to happen. And then last night, I'm rewatching the game. And I'm thinking, okay, second quarter is when everything fell apart. Let me rewatch. And really, it wasn't until the last 4 minutes of the second quarter that Memphis went on a run. And the Celtics got sloppy, for sure. They turned the ball over a bunch, and they looked a little disinterested, and they had a bad stretch. And by halftime, people are losing their minds, tweeting at me. Some dude's like, I can't wait to see what excuses you make after the game for this one. And then they came back and won. I was like, well, no excuse for that game, right? And then he had this indignant response. Like he was fine for overreacting in the moment. I guess my whole point is, and I'm with you on this, people need to just chill out. At least let the game finish. You can make a comment about, oh yeah, this is frustrating or whatever, but don't at me with ridiculous statements that could blow up in your face if the Celtics turn it around. And how many bad second quarters have we ever seen from the Boston Celtics?
That's their thing. That's literally
second quarter.
All they do, and it's like one game is not a reflection of the success of the entire season. And it's like people immediately clamoring for they have one another bad second quarter, and people are one clamoring for trades, and then two are ready to bury Terry Rozier and saying he's the worst player in the league, and they need to get him off the court. Now, did Terry Rozier have a great game? No, but what happened in that stretch was he came down and then shot an open three in transition, albeit early in the shot clock, not the best shot, but that happens.
Not at all.
No.
But you don't lose your mind. You don't flip
this
out.
Other time. And then his next, he shot an open three. How much of this team have we given them so much shit for mid-range jump shots? And you're really going to shit on Terry Rozier for taking open threes? That's why the Rockets won the game. They took nothing but threes and at the rim. It's just insane to me how upset people get with one game. It's frankly absurd. And people just need to slow their roll. Maybe they should do what I did and just like watch the game afterwards and then tweet about it, because people the emotions are flying high. And I don't know why, if it's just the Celtics or if it's just at this point in the season, but it's frankly absurd.
I really do think it's because they lost so many bad games early that now people are just, their patience is completely run out. But it really, what you should do is forget about that. That's a different part of the season. This is a different team right now, and you just got to start over. Like, Christmas is the start over point. Let's just start over. The first part happened fine. It's part of the record. But now we're starting at second part of the season, second act.
Oh, man. I was going to do a whole bit on the Christmas Day being like, welcome to the first game of the season. And now I forgot about it. It completely passed and the bit's gone. But yeah, the season just started 4 days ago. This is absurd.
Okay. I'm glad I could remind you of the bit that you forgot.
Thank you.
More junk.
Talk time? Talk, I don't, time. I have no more junk. We're going long for an off day podcast.
Yeah, we're going super long. So let's wrap this up with some tacos. We'll rapid fire because I think Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie. He's the lord of the taco truck. Give him 7 bags of Kraft macaroni and cheese. Not Kraft macaroni and cheese, just Kraft cheese. But if he wants macaroni, he can do whatever he wants. He's in charge. He's the best player on the Celtics. He's fantastic.
He is. Marcus Morris.
Absolutely. Taco all-star. Whatever he wants.
We just sang his praises. Now we get into the diciness. Is there a third taco recipient on this? Is Jason Tatum, has he had a good enough week where he had 2 games that counting numbers wise, not the best, but he also had a couple against Charlotte and then against the Sixers, where he had put up big points. But against Houston, not a lot of points, but actually that was a bad game. Against the Grizzlies, not a lot of points, but 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals. I think the other stuff that he did and the role that he played in the comeback, coupled with the 2 big scoring games, gets him on the taco truck.
I'm going to give him the taco truck, not for the numbers, but for the defense. I think he's been... Yeah. Pretty solid defensively, enough to earn a Brad shout out, unprompted Brad shout out. So I'm going to give him to the defense, but you know, it's the giving season. We're in giving mood. So sure, he gets a taco. It's his own taco truck. It's named after Taco J. So why not? The other person I wanted to note is, Yabu, our main man, Gershon Yabusele, losing a shoe, super gassed and having a very solid stretch there. Key to the Celtics comeback, and if anyone gets a taco for minimal accomplishments, it's Yabu.
Yeah, I'm in on that. Is there anybody else? I mean, Gordon Hayward, does he get one?
We haven't talked about Gordon Hayward. He had a pretty solid 14 points against the Grizzlies and was pretty efficient, but until he dunks on someone, I'm really reluctant to give him a taco.
Now, the Memphis game was his best game of the week, but he had the other games, not as bad as some people want to make it seem to be, but definitely not taco worthy. Marcus Smart.
I mean, I will give him an honorable mention for the hustle plays, but his 3-point shooting has been lackluster of recent. But
I think most of these other guys,
I don't
guys,
know. Like, it's kind of a they've been solid, but not taco worthy.
Right. Like, there's been 1 or 2 games. A bunch of these guys have had, like, decent 1 or 2 games. I think, like Al Horford had, his past 2 games have been really good. The first 2 there when he came back from his injury, still slowly coming back. So I think that's good. I think that's a good place to do the taco truck and finish the taco truck. Unless you have any additions, I think this meeting is adjourned.
Yes, we have a quorum, and we'll finalize the minutes tomorrow, but I think it's a good meeting.
Okay, great. Bang the gavel, knock, knock, knock. And that's it for the Locked On Celtics podcast. New listeners, please subscribe. If you are a regular listener and subscriber, please give us that 5-star rating and a good review. And we hope that you enjoy this podcast enough to share it with your friends. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.